Supply for their annual summer party featuring food, drinks, and giveaways. Sun will be hosting and playing tunes from the Grateful Dead and Legion of Mary. Again, that's Grateful Dead and Friends live from Bloom Garden Supply on Saturday, August 10th at noon here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, Dave and Joe talk about the bloody weekend in the United States and take your calls.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month, we'll screen Power of Community, How Cuba Survived Peak Oil on Thursday, August 8th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. When the Soviet Union collapsed in 1990, Cuba's oil supply was cut by more than half. This film tells of the hardships and struggles, as well as the community and creativity of the Cuban people during this transition away from a highly mechanized agricultural system to one using organic methods of farming and local urban gardens. Again, that's How Cuba Survived Peak Oil, Thursday, August 8th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Grendel's Coffee House, located at East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue in Portland. Offering organic coffee, daily soup specials, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch. Open daily until 5 p.m. More information is available on the Grendel's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-9550.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
It's not a fun day.
Nope.
No. Anyway, I got to tell you, this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris. I'm depressed. Again, 231-8187.
You say that every week.
Well, I say that every week because it's true every week.
Are you seeking treatment? I mean, this is a recurring problem.
I think it's kind of where you come to work it out. I don't think it's a psychological problem. I think it's a sociological problem.
Your depression?
Yes.
So it's not your fault.
It's not a question of fault.
I know.
Where to lay blame? My goodness.
I'm giving you time.
Let's get serious here. Talk about domestic terrorism. 251 shootings that we know of so far this year.
Mass shootings. Yeah. What exactly defines one? A mass shooting.
More than one victim.
Now, we defined this earlier. Let me look that up.
Yeah, go ahead.
That's an important distinction. All right, so you continue.
Okay. So anyway, the Walmart shooting in El Paso was particularly notable, not just because it was so violent and so horrible, but because it was clearly, according to a document the shooter put out, he was captured alive, essentially saying that he wanted to stop the influx of Mexicans into Texas. Now, there's an irony historically there. Remember that Texas was, until the mid-1840s, a part of Mexico. Prior to that, it was a part of the Spanish Empire. And in fact, the treatment of Mexican Americans in Texas has been off and on notoriously lousy, and the situation there is very, very difficult. It is, however, a long border which allows many, many people to cross over seeking labor, seeking work and opportunity in the United States. This has been exploited by the Trump administration very seriously. He has, that is Trump, spent over $1.25 million on immigration attack ads of the 5.6 million that he spent so far on the campaign. This is important because you cannot deny that that kind of propaganda has an effect. And it's just amazing the way in which America is able to absorb a new reality. I suspect that when the world is flooded, we'll have a new floating reality. When the world bursts into flames, we'll have a new fiery reality. the adaptability of human beings actually works against their understanding of how to build a better world, and that worries me a great deal. But let's get back to this. There is no question in my mind that the words of Donald Trump have helped legitimize mass murder in the United States. And I would have to label him the mass murderer in chief. Now, that's not something I take lightly. It's not kind of just, you know, rhetoric. It's real.
Turns out there's no widely accepted definition of the term mass shooting. The U.S. Congressional Research Service uses this definition. It's an event where someone selects four or more people indiscriminately and kills them. And this matches the FBI's definition of the term mass murder.
Right.
So roughly speaking, any sort of shooting in which there are multiple victims, at least four.
What is it? You got to have four or more?
That's, well, like I said, there is no official definition, nor any widely accepted definition.
Well, I find that ironic and weird, but okay.
Yeah.
There is obviously some solutions that will help but not stop this. It's already too late to stop the weapons per se because they're in everybody's hands thanks to the NRA and others, and the Republican Party, I have to say. But we should be barring weapons of war in public spaces. We ought to be doing that. We ought to have background checks for people who are buying that sort of stuff. But none of that is going to happen as long as we have the dominance of the turtle in the Senate.
The dominance of the turtle.
The dominance of the turtle. I mean, that sounds like a great play title.
No, it doesn't sound like a very great. I don't think I would go see
the
that.
The turtle play. Rules?
The dominance
you don't go
of the
see
turtle?
The turtle.
I'm not going to go see that.
Okay. Can't show. Don't know joking.
I want to dig in to something you're talking about, and that is the incitement to violence that the President of the United States is.
Yeah, I think that should
in.
Be actually our focus, seriously.
Well, I think it absolutely should be.
Yeah.
Now, this is not to say that the phenomenon of mass shootings in the United States is intimately connected to Trump, nor that it begins or ends with his presidency.
No.
This has been a problem for a long time. There are some commonalities, and we will get into that a little bit later in the show. But let's take the El Paso shooter by way of example. There's really no question here that his ideology was motivated by Trump's. And overlaps with Trump's.
Well, he almost word for word is saying.
Almost word
Trump
for
said.
Word, yeah. He left a manifesto.
Well, it isn't a manifesto, it's a letter. I mean, press turns it into a thing.
You're right. You know, so he left a statement or something online shortly before the shootings. And almost word for word, this, particularly the use of the term invasion when describing people coming over the border from the South. Trump has over and over again used this language to describe this phenomenon that's happening at the border. Also used less than salutary language to describe the countries of origin for a lot of these folks arriving here, to describe them, the people themselves, in less than salutary language. So is it really any big surprise that under an administration that has legitimized white nationalism, you know, that's really too nice. White nationalism is a whitewashing, I think, of, if you pardon the term.
What do you like?
I like white supremacy, because let's call it what it is, Joe.
Well, I don't have a, I'm not going to argue over the term, but I think...
No, I think this is an important distinction.
Really?
I think to use the term white nationalism is to essentially let these people and this ideology off easy, because it doesn't really get, at the root of the problem, which is, yes, a nationalist movement based on white identity is a big old problem, but what is at the heart of it? The belief that white people are superior to folks of other races.
Well, I'm not arguing with you. I think that what I am reacting to is the discourse that takes place over the fineness of the terms and the definitions of the terms, when in fact we all can agree really on what's happening. When Trump began his campaign, he dissed people of Latin origin. That was one of the first things he did. And it was notable because nobody, I don't think anybody, had ever used that particular language and that particular demonization to begin a political campaign. And apparently, you know, it worked, which means that it'll be seen again and again and again. And it has so far been seen often. And it's an incredibly destructive and evil process. I want to point out, though, very quickly, that the history of the United States, beginning from the earliest times, has seen large numbers of immigrants. During the potato famine in the 40s, 1840s, huge numbers of Irish came, and they were attacked for their Catholicism. They were attacked for their allegedly ape-like characteristics. They were attacked for all kinds of reasons. Meanwhile, minstrel shows and other forms of degradations for African Americans were a common part of the culture of the time, and served to remove African Americans from the population of so-called humans, and that justified slavery. These are things that have been seen a great deal. The fact the United States went to war with Mexico, largely to expand the area where cotton could be grown in the slave South in Texas, the fact that war was successfully waged. And by the way, one of the people who objected to it was Abraham Lincoln, who had to undergo a lot of insults as a consequence. He said, let me point to the spot on the globe where America was attacked on American soil by Mexican troops. And thereafter, his opponents, mostly Democrats, called him Old Spot, which was at that time a common name for a dog, Old Spot Lincoln. So early on, we see this pattern, and it continues through all of our history. In fact, during World War II, in the beginning of that period of time, Jewish people needing refuge here were not allowed in. The fact is that there was a common anti-Semitism bred up in the culture. So you have an anti-Catholicism, an anti-Semitism, and, of course, an anti-person of color movement, as well as a stereotypical anti-Latin American culture. All of these are still alive. They're still functioning. And all of them are still extremely dangerous. I want to give the people a number before we go any further.
Sure.
231-8187.
Well, I agree with all of what you're saying. All of these things are here. All of these things have been present in American culture since before the nation was founded. I think that's irrefutable. There's always been this strain of white supremacy, of xenophobia, and always been an oftentimes violent reaction to the presence of immigrants here in the United States.
Yeah, let's just call it racism.
Racism, yeah. Particularly those who are not of the Anglo mold. With regard to this president, he's been a racist based on available information his whole life. He and his father were persecuted. That's probably how he would describe it. Prosecuted by the U.S. Department of Justice for unfair renting practices.
Yeah, they didn't want African Americans in public buildings they were building.
Right. Discriminated against African Americans in housing. We know that he purchased a full-page ad in the New York Times about the Central Park Five back in the 80s. You recall this?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this was a group of five young boys of color who were accused of murder in a famous case in Central Park in New York City. They were later convicted. Trump took out a full-page ad calling for their execution. They were later exonerated by DNA evidence, but he has never acknowledged his mistake nor issued any sort of apology to those young men and their families. And of course, he was behind the crazy conspiracy that alleged that President Obama was not, in fact, born in Hawaii, but was involved in a complex multinational plot to smuggle him in as an infant from his real birthplace in Kenya and indoctrinate him with communist ideology so that he could one day rise to the presidency of the United States and deliver it into the hands of the commies.
And the Islamic.
Of course.
And don't forget the Islamic menace.
Right, because they're all the same, right? Yeah, right. Aren't they?
Well, sure.
So this is the guy. This is the guy who is the president of the United States. This is the guy who has given the worst tendencies in American culture permission to be publicly expressed. And I don't want to shy away from this point. I don't want to gloss over it. And in fact, we're going to spend much of the ensuing show proving it, that if not for Donald Trump's permissive language around matters of race and around matters of violence towards people who are not of the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant mold, we would not be seeing these incidences of violence that we're seeing today. Am I laying the blame for American mass shootings at the feet of Donald Trump? No, I am not. But I am certainly laying the blame for these obviously politically and ideologically motivated mass shootings at his feet. I've lost track now of the number of mass shootings that have been perpetrated by people who we have since learned have authored some sort of statement, manifesto, whatever, expressing their allegiance to Trump and his hateful ideology.
Yeah, well, this is
a fact.
This is a fact. It is a fact, and it is horrifying. And I've been following this in the New York Times and local papers, and what I discover is that the press tends to move toward a center position, a pseudo-neutrality in the face of what is clearly a dominantly fascist and racist ideology.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't call a thing a thing. You call it a something else. Somehow that makes it more neutral, makes it more fair.
Right, because in an ideal world, journalism is perfectly objective all the time, right? Nothing but the facts.
Well, that's never been the case,
but that is the ideal that they teach you in journalism school. That's what a lot of people believe the role of the press is and the way the press functions. But in this particular case, you're right. They tend to gravitate towards this neutral position because, of course, the president of the United States would not be an active racist, actively inciting violence against his political foes and against people of color, right? That would never happen, not in the United States of America. And maybe if we in the mainstream press slouch again towards this neutral position, we can pretend it's not actually happening either.
And it's almost impossible. I think it is impossible at this point to deny what is going on. There are many, many theories about it. The most far-out one I encountered from a New York Times reporter was that basically this is about a video game mindset. That is that people who are...
Oh, please.
I'm gonna say it because it's so weird and it cannot be totally dismissed. People so into that world are competing for who can kill the most people in one event.
I think that is complete nonsense.
I'm not sure it is.
There are video games are played around the world.
Yes.
Everywhere.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
There are violent video games being played everywhere around the world.
Yes.
There's violent film and TV content available everywhere around the world.
Yes.
Only one nation has repeated mass shootings. This one.
Well, I'm not sure this is
It's
the only
not
nation,
the video games.
First of all.
It's not the movies. It's not the TV. It's the guns and it's the racism, Joe.
I'm not going to argue. I think it can be both. I think it is possible.
I just said guns and. That's what and means.
Okay.
It means this and this.
All right. I think a good idea to give some of our listeners an opportunity. 231-8187. Let's go to Gordon. Gordon, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. So I find it very odd that both these shootings are wrapped around Obama's birthday, the day before and on his birthday. And I believe it's a conspiracy, obviously, because they hate Obama so bad. They so hate him so bad that they want to destroy his birth date and any recognition that he has anything
good. I don't know. I mean, think about it this way.
I don't buy it.
And this is the argument that Abe and I are having.
You gotta buy it. Everything's true until you can prove it's not. That's how you need to think. Everything is true until you can prove that it isn't true.
No, that's really not the way you prove things. But beyond that, the fact of the matter is that all of these theories, including the kind of wacky one I suggested and that Abe reacted to so strongly, all of these theories may have a germ of truth in them, but all of them do not really deal with the basic fact. The basic fact is that the United States of America was created for, and uniquely importantly, for white Anglo-Saxon men. It was a country that did not allow women to vote. It was a country that deliberately intended to destroy its native peoples. It was a country that all of its history has had examples of racism, even as it's benefited from the appearance of newer peoples here. So, you know, you got the pattern. You don't need a conspiracy per se to see that pattern built into the culture.
Yeah, he was such a really miss his calm and demeanor, and it's sad to see these people, Trump is especially, going through and just destroying his legacy, and it's just criminal. And you are exactly right. This country was founded upon the racism, and it's a country club for the whites, and they came here and they took over. So thanks for listening.
Sure. Thank you for the call. I think Obama's birthday is a coincidence in this case. We don't know the political motivations of the shooter in Dayton, Ohio, or as Trump likes to call it, Toledo, Ohio. We don't know that person's motivations. But as we mentioned a couple times now, there was a statement issued by the El Paso shooter, and that El Paso shooter says a whole lot of things in that statement, but doesn't mention Obama's birthday. So I think it's a coincidence.
Well, I do too, and I think it's irrelevant. I really do. I think what is relevant are the simple facts. We have allowed people, many of them mentally disturbed, many of them very angry in various ways, many of them very racist, to own weapons of war and to carry those weapons of war and to shoot those weapons of war at civilians. And this is now normative. That is, it's common. And we are going to become a nation that simply accepts an annual harvest of innocent people, because that will be normal. And that frightens the hell out of me.
I think we need to be careful about throwing around the terms mentally disturbed or mentally ill here as well, because I think that's another convenient course we can chart for ourselves when we're looking around to figure out why these things are happening. I think the reasons why these things are happening are evident. But, you know, and again, mental illness, as you said just recently, you know, there might be a germ of truth in that. But it's not, again, it's not the full explanation. Here's a statement from the American Psychological Association after the El Paso shooting. Here we go. As our nation tries to process the unthinkable yet again, it's clearer than ever that we are facing a public health crisis of gun violence fueled by racism, bigotry, and hatred. The combination of easy access to assault weapons and hateful rhetoric is toxic. Psychological science has demonstrated that social contagion, the spread of thoughts, emotions, and behaviors from person to person and among larger groups, is real and may well be a factor, at least in the El Paso shooting. And the statement goes on to say, routinely blaming mass shootings on mental illness is unfounded and stigmatizing. Research has shown that only a very small percentage of violent acts are committed by people who are diagnosed with or in treatment for mental illness. The rates of mental illness are roughly the same around the world, yet other countries are not experiencing these traumatic events as often as we face them. One critical factor is access to and the lethality of the weapons that are being used in these crimes. Adding racism, intolerance, and bigotry to the mix is a recipe for disaster. So when you hear the President of the United States throw up his hands and say, oh, mental illness, how terrible. Oh, violent video games and movies, how awful, we must get rid of these things. It's nuts. It's not true. The problem, sir, is you and your hateful rhetoric and the racism that has run through this country from the beginning, and the permission that you are giving for people to indulge in their worst impulses. And if we're going to talk about the mental state of people who are willing to commit acts like this, because it's easy to look at something that makes absolutely no sense and say, how could someone do this who is not mentally ill? Well, there's a whole spectrum of things that can go wrong in the psyche of a person. They can be experiencing a chronic mental illness, or they can be experiencing situational trauma. Now, I'm not a psychologist by profession, but I'm willing to bet that it's
you play one trauma. On the radio.
It is trauma that informs this behavior. Trauma and sociological conditioning, as we just read in this statement, rather than chronic mental illness that is the problem.
Well, and I think beyond that, it is semi-legitimated when you have a madman as President of the United States.
That's precisely what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a toxic brew, and people are dying all the time because of it.
And the fact that the media has normalized in its presentation the craziness of the president is a factor that I think is very important. However, let's go to the phones. I want to hear from some other folks. 231-8187. George, I believe you're next.
Hey, good morning, Abe and Joe. I'm listening with great interest and concern to your, I think, wonderful arguments with each other, which bring out some of the deep problems with some of the arguments about why these things occur. But one of the things I've been noticing over the last, I'd say 10, 15, 20 years, is that there used to be a factor which was mentioned often, It was mentioned in earlier decades and generations often as the only important factor is capital and money. And this was rightly shown to be a misunderstanding of the complexity and dynamics of things, I think. I don't know if you guys would agree with that. But one of the things I'm beginning to wonder about, I don't hear much discussion on KABU anymore about the very complex but powerful influence of capital as a dominant force in our society and so many other countries all over the world, where it interacts with racism, sexism, and everything else, and just plain cold-blooded mass murder because some country like the United States thinks, oh, we should acquire this piece of land, whether it's in South America or happens to be we should dominate Japan, and they did it for a long time, and maybe it's still there. So I'd like to hear some discussion about the role of capital in all this, which shows the kind of sensitivity which you guys certainly have about the multiplicity of dynamics. But all of these, aren't they affected by the power of great wealth in corporations?
Well, let me respond to that. First of all, I think that capitalism does warp the culture and the society, pardon me. But there are many countries which are, in fact, capitalist, extremely so, and much of Northern Europe and places like Switzerland are places that where capitalism is more dominant, if anything, than it is here. That's not a singularity that is so significant. There's no question that being poor, there's no question that having a striving for wealth that's blocked and so on can make one behave in a very aberrant and dangerous way. But I don't think that's the key to this. I really don't. I think that capitalism has its own nasty qualities, and I think that that's something we can criticize. But I think this is more about racism and more about xenophobia and more about sexism and things like that than it is about that per se. So while we can indeed say that this system creates warped thinking, we cannot say that it creates a tendency toward mass murder.
I don't think he might be onto something.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, think about this, right? Think about American capitalism and the way that it distributes wealth. Because economies distribute wealth, do they not?
Oh, that's what they do. That's part of what they're supposed to do.
The vast majority of the wealth in this country is concentrated in very, very few hands.
Yeah, 1% has 90% of the wealth.
Right. Leaving the bulk of working people in a situation where, if they're not living paycheck to paycheck, are able to squirrel away very little. And the prospects for their advancement are narrow. So yes, you might say that capital and the way that it is appropriated in our economy and the way it is distributed creates conditions that lead to a sense of desperation, where one might actually, as the shooter did in El Paso, blame people that they believe are coming here to replace them, to take away their jobs, their livelihood, the prosperity that they are owed as inheritors of this Anglo-American establishment.
Well, in a way, you may be right. I'm not happy with blaming the economic system per se for every problem. It is certainly a contributor to many of these problems. For example, the fact of the matter is that studies show that most American families are only $400 away from bankruptcy. That's every month. They're short. And there's always the danger of a cataclysmic event or a serious illness or something that can throw people into extreme poverty and, by the way, can create a huge amount of homelessness.
Yes. So, yeah, I think
so
that
our
economic system is involved in all of this.
And it's interesting because there are other societies which are certainly capitalist, Northern European mm-hmm. societies, Holland, and so on, where the social contract is more extensive, and yet there is certainly capitalism.
Yeah.
So the possibilities of coming to a social democratic, and this is something being misused a lot, those terms, social democratic approach to things could ease or improve the situation. But I think this particular phenomenon harkens to our cultural belief in six-gun justice, in the notion of white superiority, and so on. It's, I think, particularly American. Not that there aren't mass shootings elsewhere. There are.
Right. It's perhaps particularly American, but I think it's particularly white. And here's why I say that. There's a subset of white nationalist, white supremacist ideology that's called the Great Replacement. We've talked about this on this show before.
Yeah.
This is the belief, and we just touched on this a second ago. This is the fear amongst a great many white working class people, mostly men, that they are being replaced, that their status within the culture, that their economic prosperity within the culture, that their freedom to move within the culture, and to a limited extent exert their will in the world, is being replaced by brown people who are coming here. This is what people were chanting in Charlottesville. Remember, Jews will not replace us. This is called the Great Replacement. The shooter in New Zealand explicitly in the statement that he left referred to this concept. The shooter in El Paso, this is from, I'm going to quote from his statement now. In general, he writes, I support the Christchurch shooter, that's New Zealand, and his manifesto. This attack is a response to the Hispanic invasion of Texas. He goes on to say, quote, if we can get rid of enough people, then our way of life can be more sustainable. This is a thing. This is real.
It's definitely a thing.
And it's common enough that we are now talking about great replacement shootings.
Yes, I think this is true. I think that there has always been within the ideologies of the United States a set of assumptions. That was what I was talking about earlier. The assumption that men should rule, the assumption that the Anglo-Saxon peoples should dominate the continent, which includes the destruction of all native peoples and dismissing or labeling negatively of any people who come later. These are all real things, and they all play into the hands of those who dominate and use this as a way to divide the people. But it has never turned into this before. And I think the reason why it has never turned into this before, I'm afraid I have to say this, is we've never had leadership that openly, and this is the key word, openly avows a racist ideology.
Andrew Jackson.
What?
Andrew Jackson.
Yeah, Andrew Jackson. Yeah, that's true. So he got
George Washington, Thomas Jefferson,
well,
James Madison.
I'm not sure that all of them were so
I don't know.
Open.
They owned slaves. I would say that's evidence of a white supremacist mindset.
Slave, yeah.
Would you not?
Yeah, I
think that's irrefutable
I'll agree
evidence.
With that.
Okay. There's just evidence on top of evidence that the president is so wrapped up in this. He gave an interview to The Sun, that paragon of journalism in Britain, in March of 2018, and he made the following comments about immigration. Quote, allowing the immigration to take place in Europe is a shame. I think it changed the fabric of Europe, and unless you act very quickly, it's never going to be what it was, and I don't mean that in a positive way. I think allowing millions of people to come into Europe is very, very sad, he said, President Trump said. I think you are losing your culture. Look around. You go through certain areas, and that didn't exist 10 or 15 years ago. There it is.
Well,
another
piece
of evidence.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question, and this is important for people to understand, there is no question that we have a racist, xenophobic, sexist pig, I think that's the correct description, as President of the United States. What is always puzzling to me is not that he got elected, because there are many factors that brought that about, including Russian involvement, but that people actually take him seriously as President of the United States. He is, at best, a dangerous clown.
At best, yeah. And we need to remember here that he was elected by a plurality of his peers, right? He did not win a majority of the vote.
That's true.
And if not for the antiquated and, I think, frankly, racist organization of our electoral process, he would never have come to victory.
That's true also.
And I also think that it's no secret that his supporters view this as a last chance to establish white minority rule in the United States. If they're able to securely grab the reins of power now, and this is especially true and all but guaranteed if Trump wins a second term, then white minority rule can be established in the United States for the foreseeable future.
I can't argue with that. It is a very frightening situation. Let's go to the phones. 231-8187. Franny, you're next.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to say, first of all, Joe, with all due respect, I was appalled to hear you mention the Republican talking point. Yes, Republican talking point of video games. This is not a question of video games. It's not a question of economics necessarily, because a lot of these shooters are boys, you know, 18 to 20 year old boys who are doing this. They're mostly from middle class families. They're not suffering economically. So it's not that. It's not mental illness. It's that Trump is a pathological leader and these people are pathological followers. So these shooters are at the very end of the spectrum of followers. They're complete followers. They carry out his orders, which they get loud and clear. That's the only thing going on here. We don't have to talk about, oh, other possibilities, other things. That is cut and dried what's happening here.
Well, I'm not going to argue with you. I raised that question only because it became something on the net and
so
something
what?
Elsewhere.
So
well,
what?
No, it's
so
not
what?
Just so what. It's
no, so what? I mean, that's just echo. You're just mimicking what people are saying who are trying to defend the NRA and all this. I mean, why would you even bring that up? That's ridiculous, Joe.
Okay. I'm not going to argue with you about it.
I hope we did a good enough job of debunking the video games claim.
Well, but he shouldn't have brought it up to begin with. That's what I'm saying. I mean, it's just, this is KBOO. This isn't Fox News. I mean, come on.
I would not have brought it up were it not something that had appeared all over the media, not from extreme sources, but from what we regard as a rational source, that is the New York Times.
So, but you were not the New York Times, Joe, and everybody who supports KBOO, including me, knows that the New York Times is not a liberal publication in any way or progressive in any way. It's very centrist. It probably pushes to the right. The job of KBOO is not to, echo the talking points, Republican talking points, whether they come from the New York Times or Fox News.
I think it is the job of KBOO to debunk them.
Let me finish. Your responsibility, Joe, is to not give lip service to things like that, but talk about what's really going on. That's why we have KBOO.
I would submit that the bulk of the show has been devoted to just that.
Well, Francis, in my defense, I would be remiss if I did not present all of the information that's being put out there.
No, you wouldn't, Joe. And just own it. Just own that you did something this morning. That's all I'm asking you to
okay.
do. And if not, whatever. It doesn't matter.
Okay. It really doesn't matter, and you're right. I want to thank you.
No, it doesn't matter if you own it. It matters that you said it. It doesn't matter if you don't own it, because apparently you can't own it. And let's just drop it. But anyway, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Thank you for the call. Let's go to Doug. Good morning.
Good morning. How's it going?
Well, you know.
Yeah. I was going to say in a lot more calmer way. I as a young 30-something who plays video games and knows all about people's willingness to draw a line between video games and violence, that there's been the point has been made, and I think it's understandable where the confusion comes from, or the willingness to blame it comes from the older generation who's maybe never played a violent video game, to want to blame them. But the only reason that there was even video game discussion was because the verbiage in the manifesto or whatever had used it. And that's just because these websites, 8chan, 4chan, all these right-wing forums, they use video games as a colloquialism to appeal to younger people in an effort to radicalize them. It has nothing to do with the video games itself. So
yeah, I would agree with that.
That is, I think that's the only line that needs to be drawn, is that they're just using video game speak because that's the language that these young people understand. And that's just sadly going to create confusion for older people. And I mean, I get it. You're shooting people in a video game. You want to draw a line. It looks like there's a line, but there's no line there to be drawn other than just, it's an effort to radicalize younger people into right-wing shooters. So that was the only point I was going to make, was that I understand the confusion, but aside from just using it to radicalize people, that's all there is.
Yeah, I would agree.
Well, cool. Thank you. I'm sorry. I'm not going to back off of this. I believe that the culture has taken a wrong turn in using technology the way it does. And I think that's going to have an enormous effect as it plays out, because I think that technology essentially supports a totalitarian fascist point of view. And I'm sorry, I just see it. I see it a lot.
Well, thank you very much for the call. Should we go to Francis? Good morning, Francis.
Hi.
Hi.
Good morning. And I'd like to clarify something. My name is Francis. That last caller that you called Francis, Joe, is Franny.
Oh, anyway. I'm sorry. That is a bad
right. It wasn't me. It wasn't me.
Okay.
Anyway.
Okay.
I think that short-term profits for corporations that make and manufacture war machines are doing quite well right now. And what I wanted to talk about, though, was the fact that this, you know, you spoke about the news media, and Beto O'Rourke kind of called the news media on themselves the other day when they asked.
In memorable fashion.
And yes, and I appreciated that a whole lot. But the whole Trump is kind of like lifting up the rug for everybody to see how ugly the underbelly really is and has been for years and still is. And I'm reminded of a book called The Hidden Wound, which it talks about how white people have kind of pretend like none of this stuff ever happened.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
Right, and they pretend like everything's okay and we are just wonderful people.
Right, it's this
and
normal...
Never, ever, ever actually acknowledge the wrongdoing. And I think until we do that, it's going to continue. Now, I would like everyone to Google Eddie Glaude, G-L-A-U-D-E. He's a professor at Princeton, and he's also a guest oftentimes on MSNBC. If you Google his name, a video clip of his statements about how we're putting all this on Trump when it is us, and that we need to acknowledge what it is and get past it, because we keep going around and around and around and around, and this kind of stuff keeps happening and happening and happening, and we never, ever, ever acknowledge the role, Abe, you kind of referenced it a little bit, of how our history has been racist and is racist, and how the institution has flourished. Anyway, just check that video out. It's about 3 minutes.
Okay.
But he puts it in very concise terms and very passionately. Speaks to what we really need to do and can do if we've got it in us to do it.
Okay, Francis, not Franny. Right. Francis, I think in part you're right. I think one of the deep problems that we have is we need to acknowledge the consequence of our racism, the consequence of our sexism, and so on. And the fact that Trump got elected, even with Russian help, even with his being the minority a winner, as it were, all of that is indicative of a terrible national confusion.
Exactly.
And that, well, exactly. That thing, that confusion, that bad set of biases persists in the society at all kinds of levels. Now it has turned into something extremely toxic, and we tend to therefore isolate it. And probably it is the case that were it not for this kind of shooting, we would all be acting like everything was perfectly normal.
Right, and that's the problem. And Mr. Glaude referenced it as protecting our white innocence. You know, it's very deep rooted, and we just have to acknowledge it. And you know, it might end up that we might have to do some atoning and some reparating and everything. But my goodness, on the other side, would be so nice if it was really over.
Yeah, wouldn't it though?
If this racism was really over and just absurd to even think of.
We've got a long a long road to walk, Francis.
Yeah, but we've
got to
acknowledge it first. We've got to acknowledge
it. Yeah, we do.
All right. Take care.
I think part of the problem is an unwillingness on the part of white Americans to acknowledge the problem, because that can be a very difficult personal admission for a lot of people to make. And we talked a little bit about this last week.
Yeah.
The problem we're facing now, though, and I keep getting back to this, is that the guy at the top is saying it's all okay. It's all okay for you to say and do these things that you've really wanted to do for all this time. Let's consider the nature and the character of racist speech in American politics. After the Civil Rights era, after the passage of the Civil Rights and Voting Rights Act, it became less and less acceptable to be a racist in public. Would you agree with that?
Oh, I think it's generally true.
So you have, and you can read the writings of Lee Atwater, a famous Republican strategist who lays this out in no uncertain terms. You couldn't running around saying N-word, N-word, N-word anymore, right?
Right.
So instead you talk about things like law and order, or you talk about welfare queens.
A kind of euphemism.
A kind of euphemism, yes. You talk about border security. And then you send dog whistles to your supporters that, yes, while I might not be able to say what's really on all of our minds, I'm still going to let you know that I'm still in your camp. That's what it meant when Ronald Reagan launched his 1980 presidential campaign in Philadelphia, Mississippi, where three civil rights workers were brutally murdered in the not too distant past. That was how it was for a long time. And it became such that in American life, and this was a positive change, that one of the worst things you could be accused of was being a racist, right? So what that did was it led to this strange psychological gymnastics, I think, in the minds of many conservatives, which was to react to claims of racism by, no, I'm not a racist. Oh, no, no. I believe that folks of color should be free to do whatever they want. I've got some black friends. I'm not a racist, right? Because that was the worst possible thing you could be accused of. So now we have arrived at a point, and I have people like this in my family who I believe are racists, but they are unable to perceive this tendency in themselves, because to them, you're not a racist unless you got a shaved head and a swastika tattoo. You're not a racist unless you're burning crosses and wearing a white hood. But now, the president has lifted the top off of this, and all these people are coming
in. I'd say lifted the sheet.
Lifted the sheet off of this. That's better. And all these people have come out into the light. Finally, we can speak and act as we always have. And that leaves all these people who've claimed for years and years that they're not racist, yet they empathize socially, economically, politically, ideologically with this racist movement in American politics.
I think you're right, except I think that once the president lifts the sheet and says what he says, suddenly there's a legitimization of racist speech. And that, in turn, influences and impacts people a lot.
Agreed. And, and there's still the dog whistling going on.
Yeah.
Right? You can still talk about an invasion when you're not saying, oh, keep the filthy brown people out of our country. You can use a language like invasion. And let's not pretend that this is an accident. Trump himself has said it in public dozens of times. We have mass shooters who have used similar language in defending their actions. And the Trump campaign has so far run more than 2,000 Facebook ads which use the term invasion to describe the situation at the southern border.
Well, that's certainly true. And I think that it's really important to understand that the process of legitimization or openness of these fascist tendencies and this racism is extremely dangerous, not just because it was always there but hidden, but because, in fact, it becomes legitimate. It suddenly becomes a reasonable thing to have a discourse about.
Yes. I want to encourage everyone to read Paul Krugman's column that ran yesterday in the Times. It's called Trump, Tax Cuts, and Terrorism. It gives about the best synopsis of this phenomenon that I've yet come across.
Yeah, it's a very good piece.
It is a very good piece. It mentions, just briefly, I'll mention this, that more than a decade ago, when President Obama was president, the Department of Homeland Security issued a report that was warning about a surge of right-wing terrorism and extremism. But when congressional Republicans learned about it, they blew their tops. They demanded the resignation of Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano, and they insisted that even using the term white-wing extremism was unacceptable. And this is the denial that is affecting a vast swath of the American electorate. And Trump, Krugman goes on to say, but racism isn't what drives the Republican establishment. And my guess is that the majority of the party's elected officials find it a little bit repugnant just not repugnant enough to induce them to repudiate its political exploitation. And their exploitation of racism had led them inexorably to where they are today, de facto enablers of a wave of white supremacist terrorism.
I think that's correct.
I think that's right on the money. Let's go back to the phones.
Yeah, 231-8187. Barry, you're next.
Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Hello, am I speaking? This is specifically for Joe.
Okay. Right. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
I know you. I was even a student at PSU with you, and I'm that guy, old dude with the golden retriever, and we know each other in passing.
Oh, I remember you. Go ahead.
I know. I just wanted to... I had to intervene when that self-righteous woman... I thought it was the Francis that I knew it, but while I was waiting on the line, I just had to defend you. But I heard that it was a different woman,
Franny,
a woman, Fran. So
let's not beat up on her. But what is your? Where are you going with this?
That kind of self-righteousness to not mention and give Trump a platform, as you were doing. I think what you're bringing in, different arguments, allows for the critical thinking, and I think it's very healthy to do, and I wanted to support you on that and encourage you not to be moved by her self-righteousness. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. I think that the criticism of my argument about the video game aspect of this is a legitimate criticism. I brought it up because I'm a little bit freaked out by the degree to which many people get all of their information and spend a lot of their time online in game world. And that scares me. And it scares me not just because I'm an old guy and not used to that, but also because I see it as a change of mind. And I think that's very dangerous.
Yeah, and see, now I think you're spewing Republican talking points. There's absolutely no basis for that analysis. You don't know the qualitative experience and the subjective experience that people have who are avid gamers. You don't know whether that's positive or negative. You don't know what's coming out of that. And we certainly don't have a shred of evidence that links video game playing to mass shootings.
No,
and mass
that's
violence.
True. The latter part of that is true. We don't have a shred of evidence. I am operating purely on an intuitive notion about how people spend their time and what mm-hmm. they see and do.
So you may not understand the appeal or the motivations that lead people to spend their time that way, but I don't think that puts you in a place to pass judgment on it.
Well.
And that's what you're doing.
I am very concerned that the culture has taken a bad turn in its embracing of a technology, which I must add is dominated by a large number of small corporations, of small holders of huge amounts of power and money. That's real. That's certainly real. And you wouldn't deny that.
No, I would not deny that.
Okay, so that means that people are subject to the influences of ideas that were, when I was a kid, you went bang, bang, you're dead, or you mm-hmm. you know, you had fantasies of a very limited kind. Now those fantasies are not only made real on the screen, but are pathetically real.
But they're not made real, Joe. There's always a realization that you're playing a video game, that this is not reality.
I'm not sure that that's true.
The huge, huge majority of people are able to draw that line and consistently do.
Most people can draw that line. Some people cannot.
Right. And are they going out in the world and committing acts of mass violence?
We don't know.
The data says they are not.
What data?
Okay. I've looked this up last night. I'll find it again.
Okay.
In the meantime, let's go to the phones. John, you're up next.
Hi. My comment is more of a concern than, it relates to what's going on. But I was hearing on KBOO, I think it was you people had it, August 17th, Proud Boys are coming to Portland. And with this event's happening, I know you really don't know, but I was wondering, if the mayor or maybe even the governor should not allow this Proud Boy demonstration coming up a week from this Saturday.
Well, I think they have the right to demonstrate. I'm not sure
what knowing that what the background, what's going on right now, I'm just concerned that, some people are going to take advantage of that situation, and here we go again.
I think one of the things that makes the Proud Boy phenomenon interesting is that there are actual federal laws against crossing state lines to commit crimes. And as far as I can tell, and this is not built on a very strong basis of knowledge, but by intuition alone, that it seems to me that these people do provoke and in essence create situations of violence and cross state lines to do it. But this is not, I want to be clear about this, this is not an informed position, because I'm not sure exactly how it works, what the mechanisms are.
Well, my whole thing is that somebody might be a real copycat or opportunist and be on the eighth floor of a parking lot and decide to have fun.
Well, I understand your fear, and I do know that, and I don't know whether it was the Proud Boys or who, but some right-wing group definitely had long guns placed on top of a structure here in Portland. The guns, I believe, were seized by the police, but nobody was arrested.
But aren't most of the Proud Boys, this one, one of the chapter presidents is coming all the way from Florida. Now, and I also heard that, you know, a lot of the chapters are in Southwest Washington. So wouldn't that be kind of like inciting a riot, you know, like you said, like cross state lines?
Well, I can't answer whether or not that will turn out to be true, and I can't say whether or not that is evidential. I can say that we certainly are seeing a rise of out front racist, sexist, homophobic, you know, et cetera, groups parading around. Recently, by the way, there has been a very large national campaign, I think largely led by the Wall Street Journal, against the anti-fascist movement. That, too, is an example of a hysterical response, and it is in its of itself an effort to close down left-wing thinking. So there's danger here in a lot of levels.
Well, okay. Well, I'm just saying, you know, that, you know, knowing the past history of, you know, some confrontational, you know, physical violence between the two parties, and with this going on, it's just going to add, you know, more sauce to the...
Well,
you know,
I agree with you. In essence, I think there's a real danger. I believe that many people in the police community, and this is not evidential, this is my belief, are in their own politics unaware of the fact that they are both racist and sexist, and that they are very much sympathetic to the Proud Boys and their cohort. And I think there's some evidence of this in the reporting of the exchanges between the Portland police and the Proud Boys and so on.
Well, it's too bad you can't get the mayor or somebody from the city council to, you know, kind of have a round table on this before it really gets, you know, sticky.
I think Cable might be kryptonite to those folks. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, thank you for letting me talk anyway.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Absolutely. All right. We're going to go back for the second time in this show to the American Psychological Association, who put out a policy statement on this very question.
Okay.
The alleged connection between video games and other violent media to violent acts. And I'm going to quote from that report right now. Scant evidence has emerged that makes any causal or correlational connection between playing violent video games and actually committing violent activities. There's a psychology professor at Stetson University, a guy by the name of Chris Ferguson, who was the co-author of that policy position for the American Psychological Association. He says that the evidence was clear that violent video games are not a risk factor for serious acts of aggression. Neither are violent movies nor other forms of media. He goes on to say, the data on bananas causing suicide is about as conclusive. Literally, the numbers work out about the same. So there's no evidence to support that connection. Also, you can look around the world. For example, both Japan and South Korea have higher rates of video game playing than the United States. And they do not have a problem with mass shootings.
Yeah,
neither of those nations.
I think
there are several nations in Europe too that have where they play more video games.
I think I need to clarify this. It is not isolated. It is not a phenomenon that is uniquely created by video games. I think that some of the video games intend to desensitize individuals, particularly young men, toward violence. I believe that's the case. I do not think I have evidence to support my opinion, but I persist.
Okay. You are indeed entitled to your opinion.
Oh, thank you so much.
You bet. Let's go to Pear before the end.
Well, I'm here to give Joe some evidence.
Go for it.
There's a book out called On Killing by Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman, and he writes about how after World War II, before the Korean War, the Army realized that a lot of soldiers were reluctant to pull the triggers, and so they went on this kind of desensitizing campaign, and I think they used something like video games, whatever they had back in the 50s. But, you know, I think that's how the video games got into this discussion.
I'm virtually certain, Pear, that video games did not exist in the 50s.
Well, they use something like it.
Well, I think whether or not that is the case, I think what's really important to understand is that the Army has used video games in modern times as a training device. That's indisputable.
Oh, I know that's absolutely indisputable, but that's an entirely different case. I mean, that's apples and oranges, Joe.
I think it's apples and other apples. Hey, you can compare apples and oranges, but check out this book, On Killing by Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman.
All right, thank you for the idea.
Thank you very much for the call. Okay, well, can we at least agree that racism and a racist president are a factor in these racist killings?
I think we can agree that they are the major factor in this. I am not suggesting that the absence or presence of video games explains any of this. I simply think it's a contributing factor.
Okay. We'll leave it there.
Limited. And we'll argue about that a bunch, I'm sure. Okay.
Thanks again, everybody, for taking part in the conversation today. I think it was a good one.
Meanwhile, you know, if you don't show up, you ain't playing in the game, the real game.
We'll see you next week. Square.
It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Montevilla Jazz Festival on Saturday, August 17th and Sunday, August 18th at Portland Metro Arts in Portland. The Montevilla Jazz Festival features performances by Brian Smith, Dana Reason, Mel Brown and Gordon Lee, and many more. Again, that's the Montevilla Jazz Festival on Saturday, August 17th and Sunday, August 18th at Portland Metro Arts, 9003 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. KBOO will be broadcasting live from the festival on Saturday from 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Join me